Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And hello once again. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and it's another week of American Tennis. And thank you, Jason Haynes, for creating the UR Tennis Network, where we have four great shows every week. It's American Tennis at noon today. And then, of course, we've got Lisa Stone's Parenting Aces programs. We have John Denise's Florida program tomorrow, actually, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'll be on John's program. I'm looking forward to that very, very much. But John's got probably the best listening audience of everybody. And then J.P. Weber. I mentioned J.P. Weber last, but the We Coach Tennis program. And J.P. Weber is now the new owner and the director of the UR Tennis Network. But Jason Haynes, the credit goes out to you for the 4 years and the thousands of programs and the many thousands of listeners that you have had and been able to provide a forum for people to stand up, speak out, say what they wanted to say about American tennis. Sometimes it's instructional, sometimes it's political, sometimes it's just good old-fashioned information that people want to talk about and listen to. And you're welcome to call in at the UR Tennis Network here. Call-in number is 714-583-6853. That's 714-583-6853. And voice opinions, or just say what needs to be said. This is the station where you can stand up and speak out and say what you want to say. We always tell people, stay professional, address issues, not people. Hey, you can talk about those organizations you don't like. Those, I always refer to them, those bureaucratical, monopolized organizations. Daggone it, and they need to be service organizations, not organizations that just try to run the whole daggone world of tennis. And I'd be glad to talk about that at any time. And hopefully as the season gets further behind me and we get some new and fresher, what do I want to say? New and, I almost said newer and fresher energy. Does that make sense? But when the energy comes back, I want to get some people on who will debate strongly in favor of what the USTA or the ITA is doing now. They're just turning everything upside down after 141 years. 141 years, folks, that we have had our scoring system. And now they think that, wow, we've come up with this new system. It's going to pack audiences. And it is a ruse. I've always called it a ruse. There is a different agenda here to change tennis. And I want you all to, anytime I talked to a lady last night who has a league with she and her husband, and I just told her, you need to, she said, I hate these 10-point tiebreakers. And I said, well, go to the tournament director and say, you know what, we really need to be able to play a third set out so that the better player wins and so that the most learning that takes place in the third set is not cut out of the instructional phase of this game. For adults, you know, you can rationalize a little bit, but for kids, it's an abomination that they are not teaching the mental part of the game and really the physical part of the game as far as physical toughness. I often refer to tennis nowadays with youngsters as an after-school activity, not as a tough sport, that it really is because of the scoring system. It is so tough. It's so deep. There's so much to it. So anyhow, today's program is not about that, but I would like for you to stay abreast of what's going on. We have the NCAA tournament coming up in 2 or 3 weeks, and there's sure to be a lot of upsets. There have been upsets all year long. Now the scoring system becomes more important, how you can manipulate the scoring system or play with the pressure in the scoring system instead of your skill set of forehands and backhands and physical toughness and mental toughness and all of the different things. So we'll see what happens there. American tennis, every week I have instructional topics as well. Last week I started a session on pressure, and we were cut short, but I wanted to talk a little bit about how in programs called Pressure Changes really changes everything. And the pressure, the variance of different pressures throughout a match is one thing in itself. It is absolutely crazy to where to play tennis or to watch tennis and see how the grouping of a couple points in a row or the reversals of a couple points can really change everything for your performance or your player's performance. I want to try to put a little method to the madness here of the way pressure changes in tennis and talk to you a little bit about it. Many years ago, as our team started developing very well at Clemson and even in the stages that I am now in building a new program and a new institution, our institution here right now, I find that players start getting very, very consistent in performing well at practice. And you've had this situation as a coach or a player as well, where you start to get consistent with your new skills, your serves, your returns, and you start beating a new level of player in practice, and then you go out on the court, and it's a completely different ball game. And with that, and it being a completely different ball game, you absolutely have to make adjustments. Most of the time, you're very, very confused about what in the heck is going on here. You know, just what is the deal? How can my players or how can I play so well in practice days? And then when it comes down to match time and crunch time, the skill set just goes away, or it appears to go away. But basically, we'll talk about this. It's not that your skill set goes away. The gross motor skills or the big motor skills do not go away. It's the fine motor skills. The hand-eye coordination goes away. The kinesthetic perception goes away a little bit. The perceptual skills. And a player can go from, I hate to say hero to zero, but you know, you can go on a scale of 1 to 10. You could be playing like at level 9 in practice, and then all of a sudden on match day your player plays at a 5. And you're saying, what in the world is going on? So we want to add a little method to the madness here. And talk about, really, can a player, is a player clutch when they start the game? Are they always clutch during their life, or can you learn to be clutch? And that's a really, really a big thing. And that's our program, what we're going to discuss today, and we will be right back with American Tennis. This is Coach Chuck Creasy.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at chuckcreasy.net. That's chuckcreasy.net.
This is American Tennis. I'm Chuck Creasy, and every Wednesday at noon on the UR Tennis Network, you can find us by on your cell phone. You can go to UR Tennis Network. That's your letter U, the letter R, the number 10, the letter S, network.com, and you can get all the programs or go to chuckcreasy.net. But folks, we're talking about the pressure changes of pressure and how it affects performance. And first of all, you know, some of the basic things we all know as coaches is winning breeds winning, and winning allows players to become more comfortable at winning. There's a saying I use always, there's no bad win in tennis, and I recommend always, if you have a youngster, try to teach him how to win, have him play half of his sets against players that you know that he or she is going to win against. They have to get used to converting games. The beautiful thing about tennis is the scoring system. When it hadn't been dumbed down to no ad, and when it hadn't been dumbed down to 10-point tiebreakers, the scoring system is beautiful. But players have to learn how to convert games. So, first of all, in your schedule, and scheduling really is an art, the basic one-third, one-third, one-third philosophy is a great one for any coach's standpoint. One-third above your child's level, one-third below, and then one-third at their level. But I recommend always 40 or 50% below their level when a child's learning to go from the game construction part and the lessons part and the learning of the game to the competition part. There is no bad win in tennis. Now, here's the catch. Some of the kids win once or twice, and they're off and running. They're very comfortable with it. Other kids, it takes 10 or 12 or 4. I've seen kids who will win a tournament, and then the next tournament, they do not digest it. I always say it's not what you eat, it's what you digest as far as wins. Folks, this has a lot to do with the difference between self-esteem and confidence. And I want to make this comment, and this self-esteem is something that is gained very early in life. It is gained by birth order. It's gained by unconditional love and just the family structure. whether or not a child is comfortable and confident within their family frame. I mean, birth order matters a lot. I found out the loner, the baby male. Now, this is a Creasy philosophy here. It's a Creasy philosophy that no research says this. Well, there might be, but I found out the loner or the baby male of the family almost always is more comfortable winning, and they just sort of roll with the punches when things go south, more than the oldest boy. The oldest boy is a little bit too careful, a little bit too practical. They really won't go for it when it's on the line. They're a little bit too safe playing. They operate within the lines too much. They're always driving 55 to 70. The kid who puts the pedal to the metal and the boy side usually is the lone or the baby male of the family. That's a Chuck Creasy philosophy now. So the other thing is with young ladies, it's just the opposite. I found out that with young ladies, the eldest child of the siblings usually is the trailblazer, and they're strong, they're confident, their self-esteem, more with the women's tennis, they become more of, I hate to say the alpha female or the alpha player in the thing, but I've noticed that the passive girls do not do as well in tennis. The women's tennis is a bit different. With the guys, it's sort of like the youngster who rolls with the punches seems to do better. The control person also in tennis on the men's side does not do quite as well. So that's a philosophy there, and I just want to put that out there. But self-esteem is definitely different confidence. But here's what I want to say about that. Self-esteem is usually done before age 6 or 7 or 8. And the youngsters, they feel safe. They feel confident. They sort of know that they know that they know things are going to work out in their favor. Ultimately, a tennis player who, I always say, what is confidence? You know that you know that you know that you've got an answer no matter how many flip-flops or ups and downs that the tennis match has. Self-esteem, therefore, I don't think it can be built by just achievement. Here's what I believe. Confidence can be earned your whole life. Confidence through attempting great feats or not so great feats, and then accomplishing them is something that can be gained and developed your entire life. And I wanted to mention this in context of birth order. My own family, I have worked hard. I've been a hard worker my whole life. I've believed always that, hey, listen, there's a mountain. I got to try to go climb that. I got to go after it. And I've gained a lot of confidence. I believe that if a job was put in front of me, I'd say, let's go. I'm going to give it a try. However, the birth order and family structure and those things, a lot of times do not perpetuate a self-esteem where you know that you know that you know that it's always going to work out. I absolutely believe in my own life I was a hard worker because as a child I did not believe that I had a lock on things. I believe that I had to work hard and, you know, for different reasons. But I'm saying you can have a lot of confidence without self-esteem. You can have self-esteem without really having the confidence. If you're not a hard worker, then you absolutely, if you have self-esteem, you might get by at times, but you probably will have inconsistent performances. Ultimately, you have a youngster that knows that they know that they know that they are destined. That's just part of the deal. It's just a matter of time. Things are going to work out. But then they're a hard worker as well. So what are we talking about? Are we talking about talent plus hard work equals excellence? Well, sure. You know, it's ability, desire, opportunity equals excellence. Yeah, mental ability, emotional ability, physical ability, those are all God-given gifts. But hard work is something that we can control. And hard work is something where when the youngsters are successful, they will be able to repeat their successes if they own the success through their hard work. So as far as being clutch and as far as handling the pressure, again, I found out that There's no substitute for winning. There's no bad win in tennis. There's no bad win in any competition. But the point being is that when a youngster gets 2 or 3 or 8 or 15 wins, somewhere along the line, the confidence has to kick in so that they can go forward. And there are youngsters who win tournaments that really believe that they you know, they don't believe that they belong. Then there's other youngsters that win one tournament and they are on their way. It's really interesting to watch this as a coach. So as a coach, as a teacher, I've always recognized that hard work always pays off in practice. And for the long run, you believe it works. But there are those youngsters who eat the pressure just like a vitamin pill, and they use it for great play, and the other kids sort of shake in their boots and don't get it done. I wanted to go to what I've referred to as the pressure curve, Yates inverted U hypothesis, if you want to look it up in any psychology 101 book or sports psychology or any phys ed books. It shows a pressure curve, but basically as pressure increases, performance increases, and then when it's too high, you don't perform as well. I also want to mention that I had a motor learning class or scientific principles of coaching in my master's program, and I distinctly remember the teacher talking about levels of arousal and levels of intensity for best performance of sports, and he put up a level 5 was like being in a mad rage. Level 4, you know, intense, but not at a mad. 3 was sort of intense, but relaxed. 2 was more relaxed than intense. And then 1 was just completely laid back like you're at the beach. And then he put the different sports up here. And this was very, very impacting to me as a young athlete. But he put tennis as number 2 level of arousal, 2 on a scale of 1 to 5. And oh my, did that really bring some things to a great place in my athletic career, because as a basketball player, as a football player, in different sports, I thought the more intense you are, the better you will do. Well, that's not true. The point being is that tennis, loud body, quiet mind is probably the best definition, a controlled aggression, a calm in your head, but sense of urgency with your body, however you want to put it, loud body, quiet mind. Number 2 level of arousal. While were things like number one was like playing the piano. Well, of course. And a few of the diving, like being a diver, was 1 and 2. Some of the points, actually boxing was a 2. Or a three, I believe. And wrestling was a little bit higher than boxing because a little bit more intensity. But boxing, the knockout punches and everything. 5, being in a sort of a mad rage. I think they had weightlifting or something like that. Hitting in the line in football was like a 4. The quarterback, being a quarterback on a football team, was like a 3. And then actually being a pitcher in baseball was like tennis. It was a number 2 level of arousal. So as far as the pressure and managing the pressure, this is a very, very important thing that a player can find their optimal level of pressure intensity when it comes to pressure. But it goes back to the Yates inverted U hypothesis, Y-A-T-E-S, or the pressure curve. And there has to be a balance. And too much pressure, the performance is bad. Too little pressure, the performance is bad. But it's a number 2 level of arousal on a scale of 1 to 5. So how do you find this? How do you find it? Quiet. How do you find the quiet mind and loud body? Please understand, acknowledge also that every one of your players or every player in the world is a different level and a different intensity. Jimmy Connors was a he performed well as a level 3 or 4, right, on a scale of 1 to 5. You see a Roger Federer. Boy, Roger Federer to me looks like a perfect 2, doesn't he, you? Looks like a perfect 2. Nadal goes out there a 3 or 4, more intense and everything. Roger Federer is just, it's beautiful, beautiful to watch. But he's found his perfect level of arousal. But that level of arousal has to be found before you play. Physiologically, the big muscle skills will work even when you get tight. But what happens is the fine muscle skills, your hand-eye coordination and your hand skills break down. Just the releasing of the racket gets tight. The gripping of the racket gets tight. I've walked up with players sometime to pat them on the back and say, let's go, during the match and tight part. And it would be like my hand hit a rock and their back is just so tight, the tension and everything. As a coach, I have used various things to try to get the players ready, but I'm going to, this is the most simple thing I think I could explain, just a very, very basic tool to get them ready. Came up with this little simple formula to get a level 2 arousal. I said, the pressure of the situation plus the pressure you put on yourself today should equal 4. Now, the different situation is huge because it might be the semifinals of Wimbledon. It might be the first round of the City Parks tournament. The first round of Wilmington City Parks. You don't know. The pressure changes in for every situation, but you have the pressure of the situation plus the pressure you put on yourself equals 4. So if you're at Wimbledon semifinals, I guess the pressure's a 3. The tendency would be to, I got to get everything right, I got to do everything perfect. You put a 3 on yourself, that's a 6. Well, you're going to press, and your hand-eye coordination is not going to work. When it's a 3, you put a 1 on yourself. You do a lot less than you would think you do. You can go through your mental checklist, but basically you keep things simple. You don't over-practice. You don't over-sharpen the knife. If it's number 1 match, in other words, you've beaten the person 4 times before, and it's not a really important event, wow, that's where a lot of upsets happens, doesn't it? The key thing there to do is to put a 3 on yourself. You take care of every detail. I said earlier that there is no bad win in tennis. There is no bad competition in tennis, really. Everything is a learning situation. But the competition, the intensity of the competition allows some players to find that right level and others not to. But if the level of competition is something that's really, really easy, that's a great opportunity for the player who's favored to go through a beautiful checklist of preparation, body language, repetition of routines and rituals between every point, getting the body language right, getting the shot selection right, mentally practicing the walkthroughs. I don't want to call it the walkthrough because that sounds like you're not taking it serious, but to mentally prepare those things they would have to do if they were playing at Wimbledon. Most upsets happen in tennis because, or any sport, because when it's a level 1 event or levels of around, you know, number 1, players say, well, it's not a big deal today, I'm going to get through this, and they put them a 1 on themselves. So again, 1 plus 1 does not equal 4. 1 plus 3 equal 4. Again, if it's really, really an intense situation, you put 1, number level 1 on yourself. So a 3 plus a 1 equal 4. If it's a low-level match and you're supposed to win, put a 3 on yourself and you'll never goof up and you won't lose to someone you're supposed to beat. The easy ones to get ready for are the 2 plus 2 events. In other words, the intensity of the event is a 2. You put a level 2 on yourself, and that equals 4. So, again, folks, we're trying to get to that number 2 level of arousal for competition. And again, it's the loud body, the quiet mind. And really what you really, really need to do is to pay close attention to the personality types of your players and to pay attention to, you get to know them after you watch them in lower level events, higher level events, and those events that are sort of at their level. So with scheduling, again, when the youngster is starting out, I recommend 50% of the time play them against players that are not as good as your player. And probably, I would say, do it 50% below, 25, 25, middle and above. When a player is rolling, even at the highest levels of competition, you stick with a third, a third, a third. And we've got a caller calling in here. I'll be right to you in a second. Caller, let me get through the part I wanted to. I wanted to talk about acknowledging the situation that you have before you go into competition. Look, you can have everything perfect in practice. You can lay this out for your player. You can have the perfect competitor. You can have a player, even a Roger Federer has said, I heard him say in something I read, that he knows that the game of tennis can get you at any point. You must, going into the match, and realize that if I don't work hard and I don't bring all my A game, I could lose today. But it's that little bit of uncertainty and that little bit of danger or nervousness or being uncomfortable that makes you play well. It's very, very important to have a little bit of nervousness. Now, the butterflies are great, but you must get them to fly in formation. Being scared is not great. So if you're too laid back, it's bad. If you're scared, it's bad. But having that little bit of on-edge mentality where I'm ready to go here, I'm ready to fight, I'm ready to compete. So I want to talk about evaluating the situation you have coming into your match here in a second. I want to go to a caller here and see what they have to say here. I think this is Coach Weber. Coach Weber, is this you?
It is, Coach Creasy. How you doing?
I'm great, and I've talked about you already and the We Coach Tennis program, and everybody that listens to UR Tennis Network is very, very happy that you now are the CEO of the UR Tennis Network, and you've kept it going here because it's literally thousands of programs, Coach, and without the UR Tennis Network, I don't know, is there a better vehicle out there for people to talk about the things that they want to talk about? I mean, just thanks for doing it. Could you comment on it in some of the programs?
Yeah, I had hoped to call in and maybe talk to you about a couple of things. I can mention, I think that, you know, you and I have talked about this before. It's pretty hard to get 300, 400, 500 tennis people in a room together to listen to a lecture, to listen to this, listen to that. And I think sometimes, depending on at least on my shows, on the We Coach Tennis show, you know, it depends on the guest. I suppose the guest drives a little bit. Now, of course, you know, half of all of the world is tuning into your show these days and listening. So you've got thousands and thousands and thousands of people who are picking up your show.
Well, let's go. First of all, let's credit Jason Haynes. Let's credit Lisa Stone's program has been a big hit. But, you know, the guy that's knocking it dead is John Denise. John Denise is just a wonderful human being, and he's really getting great information out there for the coaches. So, Coach, it wouldn't be going on here if you had not jumped in, so thank you. But go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting. Your thoughts.
Well, I was going to comment. I was actually going to ask you to comment. You know, I've never, you know, and you're a motivator. You're probably, if I had to, you know, I've worked with you a good bit. If I had to, I mean, you're not in any way, I don't think you're technically deficient with coaching tennis, but I think that your strongest part, to me, it seems like, is your ability to motivate players. So it's a good question to ask you. And what you were just talking about in terms of arousal level, you know, for the player and get them set and get them ready. So let me ask you, so my thought or my observation over the years with tennis is that it's really tough. It's not like basketball or football. Now, I'll tell you, the USGA's blown it out of the water with the crap that they're doing. There's a 10-point tiebreaker for the third and all this other stuff. But, you know, back in the day when you had a 10-minute break and you had a few minutes to talk to a player, you might be able to do a Newt Rockne speech, but I don't know that that was always appropriate in tennis. I don't know that it was appropriate in tennis to do the Newt Rockne speech beforehand, because tennis is a little bit longer thing, and you don't want them too high and too low. And, you know, in basketball, you've got the halftime speech. In football, you know, you've got – I think there's great stories, you probably know them, of Danny Ford going in and throwing things, or Paul Bear Bryant, you know. I know there's a guy at Notre Dame that he was, I guess, an offensive lineman coach, old bald guy, and he used to get the guys, they were still wearing their helmets, coming in, and he'd smash heads with them. His head would be bleeding. Pat Riley in basketball one time. Pat Riley in basketball one time, one of the halftime speeches I know about, and I don't know if you've heard this one, was he grabbed the cooler. He pulled the lid off the ice cooler, and he dunked his head into the ice cooler, and the players are all standing around looking at him. He's in the ice cooler. His head's in there, and a minute goes by. 2 minutes go by. 3 minutes go by. He starts to struggle. He's struggling, and he's and his head is in the cooler, and it's covered with ice, and they're all looking, what is he doing? And they begin to grab him, and they pull him out of the cooler, and he's barely able to breathe, and he's telling them, you guys better want it this bad. You know, so you can do that, and I think in those sports you can do something like that more, but you're the master motivator. Can you do that kind of stuff at tennis, or what happens in tennis when you're talking to a player as a coach? I like to hear it from a coaching standpoint. What happens to a player when you get in their face? You know, that you got a 10-minute break. You got a 12-year-old little girl or your 12-year-old little boy. It's third set. It's a break. Do you smash their head? What do? Do you throw ice on them? You throw ice? Hey,
yeah.
You throw ice water, possibly Gatorade on them, coach? What do you do?
You know the point is that every player – every person is different, and some people respond to different motivation in different ways. And I think
but what works for you? Because if you try, I had one coach that told me one time, I like that, and I hear that. But coach, if you try to,
we're
match,
all trying. We're trying to get. We're trying to get the same outcome. You miss.
But if you match up, if you try, Coach Creasy, if you try to match up to them, you'd go schizophrenic if you tried to match up to all the different personalities. There's bound to be something.
No. Here's the point. The only time as a coach you get really, really upset with the players if they're not engaging in the pressure. In other words, pressure is part of the deal. But if players are avoiding the pressure, are tanking, or semi-tanking, I think that's the time when a coach really, really has to get upset with their players. But, however, you're trying for that number two level of arousal for every player. And for the more intense player, it's a different – I'm not saying that you put them in a dark room and let them listen to whale music before they play, but for a very intense player, I have one of my players on my team right now is very intense, and – he has to go through a whole ritual of taking a walk and running and different things to get his level of arousal to a number two level of arousal before he plays. Now, other players are really, really laid back, and they don't have a sense of urgency, and you have to get them more fired up. So everybody is a little bit different. And no, you have to handle it individually, and you have to make sure that they have the butterflies, but then get them to fly in formation. That's the critical thing. If they don't have butterflies, they're not ready to play. If the butterflies do not fly in formation, if they're all over the place, they're not ready to play. That's what we've been talking about on today's program. But most of that is just an acknowledgement of the pressure that's coming. In other words, I use the, if it's really, really intense, level three pressure, you have to put number one on yourself. If it's a number one where it's really an easy match, you've got to put more pressure on yourself. The 2+2s or the rivalries are very, very easy to do, coach. And but, you know, the bottom line is we're all trying to get our kids to
Well, let me
ask you. Bottom line, let me finish this. We're all trying to get our kids to acknowledge that there is pressure. Pressure is good, but they have to use pressure in the right way with the right balance. Okay, go ahead.
Now, let me ask you, for junior, you got your, let's look at, you got some kids, you got, and you're not just a great college coach. I think I've said it on your show before, you need to create a book, you know, have it a companion book or a small book like Wayne Bryan's, no more than 100 pages. For little kids, you've got some of the best stuff for little kids, I think. But you're talking, let's talk, or give me some advice. You know, you got 10, 12, 14-year-old kids. A lot of these people that are listening to you, they're coaching kids. They're not coaching college athletes, you know, guys, tough guys like what you've got at the Citadel. They're coaching little girls. And so as you're going out there and you're looking at talk, do you generally think that fire-em-up speech is work in tennis? Does that work in tennis?
There's a time part, coach, and then after,
or a split of the sets, do fire-up speeches work at split of sets? You know, I'm trying to see, do you want, you got three matches in a day, or you got two matches in a day, do you want to put them on the roller coaster, or do you try to keep them even keeled?
I do not think one size fits all. There are times where you have to read a player who is not engaged. You got to read them the riot act. You tell them to get their head in the right place and let's go. It's going to be hard. But in other players, you might be telling them a joke or something to get them to take pressure off themselves. But the bottom line, you have to know your players, and you have to know. Now, I'm getting a whole new education right now as an assistant coach for Little League Baseball, 10 and under. And even all of these youngsters with where they're at, they have their own unique personalities, and they have a way that you have to reach them, and they are all different. But window dressing does not work. Window dressing does not work. And you've got to get the kids to engage. So, Coach, I'm going to give you the last word. I only got a word, minute or two left here. Thanks for calling in today. Thanks for what you're doing.
Okay. Well, go ahead. I just appreciate getting your advice on this. I think coaches, you know, also have to try and be themselves. So, you know, some coaches are probably going to, you know, be able to.
Well, sure you do. Sure you do.
Move and, you know, and change with different kids. But then I think when you're dealing with 20, 24 kids or something like that, it's tough to you sort of – and I think that you're – you know, if you look over the years, you're probably very, very different in your approach than, say, a Greg Patton. And you're probably very different in your approach than, say, somebody else.
Yeah. That's
so there
right.
is a tendency to be a certain way, and that's what I'm – I guess that's – I'm not trying to get – I'm not trying to lead you to answer a certain way. I'm just trying to understand better, I think, what works.
You've got to be who you are, not who you attempt to be. You've got to be who you are and find your style of coaching, just like a player has to find their own style of playing. But I really appreciate you coming on there, Coach. And folks, we only got a minute or two here, but I wanted to thank Coach Weber again for the UR Tennis Network and listen to his program, We Coach Tennis, and watch his website, over 3,000 people. Wow, you get some great, great things on We Coach Tennis, the Facebook site. But, folks, we're going to continue this discussion next week. I do have two coaches in the next couple weeks coming on the show. Hey, folks, I'll be on John Denise's program tomorrow afternoon as well. And I wanted to say, I'm Chuck Freeman.
Made in America. Never buy a tattooed on his Simpsons. Spend a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't president. He's just made in America.
is Coach Chuck Creasy reminding you that you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do, folks, with a win or a loss. Keep helping that youngster right in front of you. I'll see you next week on American Tennis.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.